Dhammata is seven spiritual stations. You may already know that. One day when I was flipping TV, when I turned on the TV, I saw the children on the TV and they interviewed and asking, someone asked them, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be rich. next one, I want to make a lot of money. So the same. I want to make money. So when people when they are young and then they want to be rich, actually materially, they want to make money. They want to get a lot of money. And yesterday a lady came to me, came to see me before she came to see me, and she was she meditated in the Dhamma hall about 1 hour, and then came to see me and asked three questions. And before first she told me her long story about the job. About the job. Now she quit her job yesterday. So she didn't want to go home. She didn't want to go, she didn't want to see anybody, and she didn't want to see even her husband. She wanted to stay alone. She wanted to stay alone, so she decided to go to a monastery, and then she spent about 3 hours at the monastery, and the last 1 hour, came to see me to ask her some questions. And she got a double degree, and the second degree, she took second degree because she wanted to change her profession. So her job is pretty good, her salary, her payment is pretty good. After 5 years, she feels wearied with that job. And she got a lot of money, but she was not happy. She was not happy. She doesn't like. She just said, "Well, now, but after 2 weeks, she's going to quit." Yesterday, she already told her boss, "And after 2 weeks, I'm going to quit." So today, she's at work. So she, even though she got a lot of money, actually, let's say, she says she make a lot of money, and she doesn't like this job. She feels she felt weary with that job, and then I asked her why don't you like that job? You're getting money, and people find good job, trying to get good salary, good payment. You got a lot of money, and then but you don't like that job. Why? Why don't you like that job? And she said, the people around her, her partner, Sandra, they all the time, almost all the time, are gossiping. Gossiping. And she is pretty, religious. She didn't, she doesn't want to say anything about, like a vain talk. So, she doesn't get any knowledge or any good things from this talk. So most of the people actually, kept talking, all the talks are in vain. They're meaningless. So now she was so weary with that job that she quit. So when we are young, we want money. We want to be rich, actually materially, strictly speaking, we want money. So people are choosing to get that money, good job and a good salary. But when they grow older and older, when they're getting older and older, and then they change direction. They want money, but they want more happiness, they want to be rich spiritually. because in all the time, like they feel beating their hands all the time, they got a lot of pressure and stress. So even though they got money, they don't like the job. So they change their direction to get the other happiness. You know, they want to be spiritualist. So sorry. How can we be spiritually rich? So today I'm going to tell about that. Seven spiritual treasures. If you have these treasures, and then you can be called a rich person. So if I talk about these seven spiritual treasures, I cannot avoid you to tell this story, because it comes from the one story. This story can be found in two books. One is in the Dhammapada, you may know that. And the other book is in Udana. So the story in the Dhammapada is pretty short, and the one in Udana is pretty long, a little more complete. So I will combine together. And during the Buddha time in the city of Rajagaha, and there was a leper called Supa Buddha. You may know that person. Then Supa Buddha was different from the other person. The other Supa Buddha, who was the father of Yasodhara, and also who was a member of the Sakya clan. So it's been Buddha's father-in-law. So this person, this king, was also Supa Buddha. This Supa Buddha is an ordinary person, and also a leper, so poor. So see, as he has leprosy, and as he was poor, he had to beg for food and other things, and you know, going around in the city. So one day he came out to beg food in the city. So he saw a big crowd from a distance, and oh, that's a big crowd. Surely some food may be being distributed, you know, to some people like him. You know, he was like a homeless person, because he just going around and, you know, begging the food. And so he just went there. When he approached, and then he didn't see the food being distributed over there. He said, but saw, you know, the crowd was quiet and listening to the Buddha's preaching. And then, oh, there's no food being distributed. The Buddha is preaching. So I might while listen to the Dhamma talk today, and I would like to listen to the Dhamma talk, like, you know, this is my chance, you know, this is my, I came across to the Buddha's the Dhamma talk, so I would like to listen to Dhamma talk. I would not go to any other place to get food. And then he sat at the edge of the audience, at the edge of the crowd, because he didn't want to go into the people. He didn't want to sit in the among the other people. He was a leper. He had a leprosy. It is said in the book that the custom of the Buddha, the Buddhas don't want to waste their time. Because even a second is very important, because they are, you know, preaching the Dhamma to the beings, to the people. So even though they are, you know, they are giving a talk or preaching, first they look into the minds of the listeners. Today, who is going to realize my Dhamma teaching, my Dhamma talk? Capable of understanding, capable of understanding my teaching, you know, was going to attain, you know, the Nirvana, something like that. So when the Buddha surveyed the audience, Buddha saw that person, the Super Buddha, sitting at the edge of the crowd, at the edge of the audience, the last one of the crowd. And then he saw that person, and the Buddha checked another one, and whether he had accumulated the parami, perfection in the previous life. And then, yes, he had already accumulated the parami of perfection. Another thing is whether he is capable of understanding the teaching or capable of reaching the attained enlightenment, and yes, you know, he is ready to understand Buddha's teaching. So when the Buddha see this kind of person, the Buddha and you know the Dharmite, Buddha's Dharmite, they are preaching to that person as though they were, you know, directly preaching to that person. Now, maybe the audience may not know that, but Buddha's, you know, directly preaching to that person, because you know the Buddha's, you know the that person's mind and parami, you know, done in the previous life, and also their mind, their capable and the capacity of their mind. So that Buddha directs that person, but other persons may not do that, not notice that, just listening to the Buddha. So today the Buddha directs his talk to the Super Buddha, and Buddha talks on dana, charity first, and also the benefits of the charity, dana, and then talk on sila or morality and the benefits of the sila, moral conduct, and then the solitary war, deva war, solitary war, where those who practice and dana, charity, and sila, and the moral conduct are born, and then they enjoy their lives. So, and then showing the pleasure of the celestial world, and then Buddha talked about the collection of sensual pleasure, the faultiness of sensual pleasure, the degradation of sensual pleasure, and that makes it bad things of that, you know, that they were wrong. It said, you know, good, bad, later, after that, you still have, you know, bad things, something like that. So, this Buddha gives a talk in order, you know, and first, dana, charity, second, sila, morality, third, the deva war, where they can be reborn, and they can enjoy that. And then, the Buddha showed that the faultiness of this, the celestial world. And then continue to show the benefits and renouncing the sensual pleasure and renouncing the world. So the Buddha gave a talk in order so that to prepare the mind of the listener, and in that place the Super Buddha. So Super Buddha just follow the Buddha's, you know, preaching, you know, step by step. So Buddha, while, you know, Buddha was preaching, Buddha checked the mind of that person. You know, his mind, the mind of Super Buddha's began clear and calm, and purer and purer. And then when his mind is ready to understand his talk, and the Buddha gave a special talk, and that is peculiar to the Buddha. I mean the four noble truths: suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So if their mind is not pure enough, clear enough, you know, sometimes, you know, the mind may not be free from the hindrances, or may not pure, and then their mind cannot accept this deep teaching, the Four Noble Truths, the deepest teaching. So So Buddha knew that his mind was ready to understand, and the Buddha, you know, just like a giving, he understood full of the truth. And his mind was so, she was so clear to understand that. And at the end of the his, you know, the Dhamma talk, there arose in his mind the, we call the end of Dhamma. So when we say the end of Dhamma in the book, you know, and that means that the listener can be a Sotapanna, or the sometimes the listener can be a Anagami, the top level. So here, Sotapanna. So I think in the commentary, it doesn't say, you know, how long something like that might be. It says, you know, Buddha, you know, taught the Four Noble Truths. Maybe sometimes, you know, some people may want to know in broad and in detail each truth. Sometimes, you know, they may want to know more about the cessation of suffering, Nirvana, and the Buddha may give a talk in extent, in detail. But in the commentary, you know, it doesn't say about that. Because, you know, different people, different temperament, different desire. So Buddha knew that. But here, it's, maybe it's understood. The commentary doesn't say anything. So, it says, only says that at the end of the Buddha's talk, and he gave his Sotapanna, that means that he knew the Four Noble Truths. He became enlightened. And so after he knew himself that he became a Sotapanna, and he was so happy that he wanted to, you know, inform his attainment to the Buddha. But it's not he was afraid to, you know, to approach to the Buddha, because the people were, you know, how do you say, approaching to the Buddha, maybe like appreciating Buddha, I was very pleased to you are teaching, something like that. So those people are very gentlemen and gentle ladies, something like that. Maybe the rich people are some, maybe. So he was a leper, but now he is a servant. And he doesn't want to, you know, push himself into this crowd. And then they might look at him, you know, with the, this, how to say, this guy's eyes, something like, maybe angry eyes, say, you are leper, why did you come here, something like that. If someone say like this, and then, you know, it's serious effort, because he became a real, a pure person, a noble person. So that, you know, he didn't want any person to get that effort, that akusala. That's why he did approach to the Buddha. He still waited until the people was clear. But after that, the Buddha, you know, went up to the monastery. So he just followed him maybe a little distance from, you know, from behind the Buddha. Why he was following the Buddha, and then, you know, Sakka, the king of gods, knew that he was following, you know, the Buddha to inform the Buddha that he, you know, his attainment. So Sakka said to himself, I want to test him. So he came down from his abode, from Sarasya abode, and then asked him, you know, said to him, "Hey, Sama Buddha, you are a leper. You are a poor person. You know, a little leper, and you are, you know, an affected person. So I will give you the immeasurable wealth, and the immense wealth, a lot of wealth. That means maybe money or treasure or something like that. But you just say the Buddha is not the Buddha, the Dhamma is not the Dhamma, also the Sangha is not the Sangha, and I have nothing to do with the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So you just say that, I will give you the immeasurable wealth." And then he looked wrong. He saw nothing, because Sakka didn't show his body. His body was just above. See. So who are you? So, because, you know, the sound came just above his head, right here. So who are you? "I'm a Sakka, the king of gods." "Huh? You are Sakka? You don't even deserve to talk to me. You don't even deserve to talk to me. And you are saying what is not fit to be said. And I'm not a poor person now. And I am not a rich person. Maybe until he approached the crowd, you know, and he may be a poor person, but now, and I'm a rich person, spiritually, I mean. So, I'm not shaking from that faith, you know, from that belief in the Buddha and the Dhamma and Sangha, because I have a family, established my center or confidence. So my confidence and the Travajam cannot be shaken now, very strong, because he has already changed his, you know, the setup and the level. So nobody can shake it, this setup, this faith, very strong. So our sadha, our confidence can be shaken, you know, when you have a doubt, right or wrong, so we're not sure something, that's a little bit shaking. So his style is like a, you know, rock mountain, you know, no matter how tornado strong or how, you know, typhoon strong, the, you know, the rock mountain never move anywhere, never shake, you know, because the rock mountain is so strong, you know, not like a sand mountain. Sand mountains are always, you know, moving this side and that side because it's not solid. But rock is solid, heavy, you know, never shake. So, in the book, it's compared to this kind of a sadha is compared to the rock, like a rock mountain. And so, the sadha, knowing that he could not, you know, shake his sadha, so went to the monastery and talked to the Buddha, and the decomposition between the, with the Sopa Buddha. And Buddha said, Sekha, 800 or 8,000 Sekhas like you cannot shake his Sekha, because his Sekha is so strong now. He said he already changed his Sadhapana level, he became Sadhapana now. So, let alone one Sekha, that means one, the king of God. You know, even 100 or 1,000 Sekhas, 1,000 kings of God cannot shake his Sadha, because his Sadha is so strong now. And then the king of God, one of his abode. After that, Subha Buddha, you know, entered the monastery and approached the Buddha, reported that he had you know, the change that level, something like that. And then he proclaimed himself to be a follower of the Buddha, and also said that the Buddha please regard me a follower of the Buddha, and the lay person that who takes refuge the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, even at the risk of my life. So that means I'm your follower, your disciple. I will be, you know, your disciple even at the risk of his life. So that means his sadha was firmly established in the Travajam. And okay, so let me finish the story briefly, you know, I will come back to that, please. And after he left the monastery, he was attacked by a cow with the young cow, you know. So on the spot, he died. So the monks assembled here, and then, that person, you know, just came back from the Buddha, you know. So went back to the Buddha, these monks went back to the Buddha, and then, said the Buddha, Bhante, you know, the man who was led in by you and your talk, you know, has been killed by a cow. So we want to know what might be his destination, what might be his future life. That means, you know, now, where is he now? So will he be reborn? So Buddha said, he already cut the three fetters. That means the three fetters means three sanyojana. So he is he will not fall down to the woeful state, four woeful states. He is sure, and he is bound for the higher attainment. And that means, you know, he's ready to attain, you know, the other attainment. And one of the monks, you know, asked the Buddha, and then Bhante, you know, he is in this life, he attained that level. So he became a noble person, a pure the Sotamana. But why? What is the reason to be a leper? So Buddha said, and a long time in the previous life, and that he was in this very city, the city of Rajagaha, he became a rich person. So on the way, he saw the Pachika Buddha, Pravi Buddha, and he said that, who is that leper, you know, going around here and there to get food? So he used that language. He knew that the Pachika Buddha was not the how to say, the leper. But maybe the robes, maybe a little bit, you know, maybe with some holes, something like that, because the Pachika Buddha used the wear the pansukula robe. Pansukula means you know, they collected some piece of clothes from the cemetery, and then, you know, make a stitch, and then until they got this big measurement. So maybe a little bit dirty, because it's not good looking color, but not bright color like ours. So that's what he said. Who is that leper? Who is that leper, you know, going on here and there to get food? So he knew that he was not leper. The Bhupachika Buddha was not leper. And not only that, he's, you know, spat at him. And he acted disrespectfully to the Bhupachika Buddha. Because of that bad karma, you know, he suffered in hell many, many, many years. And then, as a residue of the result of that bad karma, when he was born as a human being, he became leper. Because he said, you know, he said to the Bhupachika Buddha, who is that leper? Because of that, you know, bad karma. But here, you know, because of that bad karma, he was reborn as a human being, not that bad karma, not that akusala, you know. He was reborn as a human being as a result of a good karma, you know, he did in other previous life. So he has a good karma and bad karma. There are two karmas here. Good karma produced to be, you know, human being. Bad karma, you know, make him a leper, so something like that. And but another monk, asked the Buddha, may I ask, you know, another question, something like that. Yes, why he was, not very long, he attained the Sotapannahood, and then he was killed by a cow. So why he was killed? Buddha said in one of the previous lines, he was the son of the rich merchants. You know, his father was very rich. So the young man, you know, the four young men are, you know, the son of the rich persons. So the, you know, they hire a prostitute to go to the pleasurable garden. So they spend their time for 4 days, you know, in that garden with that prostitute. So when the end of the day, when they came to the they place on their garment, they have to pay for the money, that's $1,000. And when they went back home, you know, they wanted to get that money back from her. Not only that she was beautiful, and they also as she was, you know, prostituted, she wear a lot of, you know, the like rings and many jewelries in her body. So they wanted to get the jewelry, this dress that is from her body. So they one of the young men whispered to another person. So she heard that, you know, hey, you know, there are no person in this forest, in this garden, in this forest, you know, all the people, only we are here. So if we kill her, and then we can get our money back. Also, you know, the other pleasurable things, you know, precious things like earrings or rings or, you know, many things. So she heard of it, and then she said, okay, and then you can kill me one time in this life, you know. I want to kill you 100 times by being an ogress. So I want to be an ogress, and then I want to kill you 100 lions. So she made the honest out loud. Make a patana in Pali, you know, make a wish. And after that life, she became an ogress. You know, she killed these 4 young men in every life. So this is the last life. So that's why, you know, he was killed by, actually that cow is not real cow. So that ogress transformed herself like a cow. That's why she's just waiting this chance to kill him. So she's just waiting out of the monastery. When he came out of the monastery, you know, that cow, you know, just attacked him. This attack, you know, there's a cow, it's not only the cow. She has ogre, that's why maybe very powerful. One attack is enough to kill him. That's why he was killed by the cow. Okay, so let's go back to the... After he died, he was reborn in the Sarasya world. So he was surpassed in the other deities and beauty and splendor, glory, something like that, you know. More beautiful, more rich than the other deities, the other devas. So in this story, he said that I have I'm a rich person, spiritually, and now I possess 7 spiritual treasures. He said 7 treasures. So let's check whether you have or not. The first treasure is Sada. You already know that. Sada, and it's a translated belief, faith, or confidence. Actually, we cannot find the equivalent English word term, but no word can cover the meaning of the Sada. Sada, the meaning of Sada is very broad. Sada is one of the treasure. So that means that he, Soba Buddha, has a strong Sada, and he believed in the Buddha or the enlightenment of the Buddha. And also he believed that the Buddha was a real enlightened person, and Buddha knew what is it, Buddha knew in the what is to be known, and without outside help. So he Buddha knew everything by himself, and also he believed in the Dhamma and the Sangha, also the realm of the river, also the wholesome karma, and the result of wholesome and unwholesome karma, and also the practice. So, if someone has this kind of a Sada, and then he or she is said to be to have, you know, the this kind of confidence. So sadhana is very important, you know. In our country, we, you know, we always say chetana, chetana, something like that. Whenever we do, you know, chetana is always involved, and because chetana always push us to do something. But chetana always push us to do anything. Whenever we do, you know, something, chetana always push us. But when we do something wrong, chetana always push us. So saddha always push us to do only good things, wholesome deeds. So saddha is like access to enter the you know, the wholesome area. Wholesome area. What, you know, without this kind of saddha, you will not come here, let alone to practice. Because you believe in the Buddha, his teaching, in the, his noble sangha, including the ordinary sangha, also the, you accept the karma, the good and bad karma, also the result of these karmas, and also you believe in the technique now you're doing, now you're practicing. So that's why you came here. So it's clear that you have this kind of, you know, saddha. So the saddha is one of the spiritual treasure. So you have this. Another one is sila, morality. So keeping the precepts is one of the spiritual treasure. And this morning you observe the five precepts: no killing, no stealing, no sexual misconduct, no telling lies, no intoxicants. So actually, these precepts are treasures. You are real treasure. And what the sila is very, very important, especially these days. You know, and worldly life as well as in the spiritual life. You know, most of the many people are slightly or partly breaking the rules. You know, it's a funny. Yesterday, you know, one young man came to our monastery to claim the restroom, all the restroom. You know, he claimed all the restrooms, and I asked him. You know, he went very smart, you know, about me, Yakati Tati, you know, sorry, you know, he wearing the very smart clothes and, you know, and professionally, you know, something like that. He, you know, wear the t-shirt, not t-shirt, I don't know how to, and then, you know, the trousers and, you know, very shy shoes, something like that. But when the monastery, you know, he just cleaned the restroom, all the restroom. I asked him, when he finished, why do you claim the only restrooms? But I'm a realtor. A realtor talk to many people, you know. Sometimes we have to, we can avoid to use white lies. Because, you know, this house is very good, you know, cheap price, a good area, very close to the, you know, good school, something like that. Maybe sometimes yes, sometimes no. So he's using it, even though his white lies, you know, may not damage to the other person, but he's using it because he's a realtor. So he's always dealing with the people using, you know, white lies. And then he doesn't feel that my mouth is now dirty. That's why I need to clean something dirty. And then he always, you know, once a man come to the monastery to clean this restroom. That means like a confession. You know, when we break one of our rules, we need to confess, right? Every morning, every maybe evening. And the same way, okay, this is a lay person's confession. The confession of a lay people. Right? So this is a kind of remedy. I said, yeah, good. Because you know what you did. You know what you're doing. You're, according to your profession, you may use what you like, but be careful not to lie very serious you know, like damage other people, you know, family, or lose a lot of money, property, something. Don't, why lie? But I don't recommend, but maybe it's still okay, because you can, it can be curable, it can cure, it can be cured by doing something good. Because, you know, we have a good or many good lives, and there's some good lives, you know, can be, you know, pressed not to come up to produce a result. Something like that, you know. So people are breaking the rules, you know, the slightly or maybe totally. And today, these precepts are very important in the both in the, you know, daily life as well as spiritual life. Now you are, and especially when we practice Upasana meditation, without pure sila, we cannot hope to attain the concentration level. You know? When you did something wrong, and then maybe while you are doing something wrong, we don't know that, but you know, this is, you know, doing something wrong. But after that, we know, oh, that's wrong, I shouldn't do that. Why, you know, I did that, and then blame ourselves. And then this thought come to us again and again, spoil our meditation. And then we can not, you know, make any progress to get a good concentration. So we are, you know, like fighting with ourselves, you know, and then blaming my, you know, ourselves, why did you do that? Why did you do that? Something like that. So, you know, it's important, you know, to keep our sila pure. That's why, you know, the pure moral conduct is a treasure, one of the treasure. And for lady, the five precepts, you know, the follower of the Buddha, all the Buddhists are expected to keep at least these five precepts. You may slightly break the rules, and then you can do that like this young man. Something to it good. And another story, let me tell you. And when I was in Burma, the her husband was the chief police, you know, chief police in this town, you know, in the second town. So they have post is pretty high, but he drank everything. Every day. Does she didn't say her husband, you know, not to drink alcohol. Okay, honey, you can drink, you may drink. But after that, you have to, you know, or how to say, you have to stay home with the Buddha for 30 minutes. For 30 minutes. That means that her husband, you know, the drank alcohol, maybe one or two or maybe three packs before his the dinner. And that makes he break the fifth law, right? The fifth precept, you know, drinking alcohol. So she knew that, okay, after that, before you go, you know, go to bed, you take this precept from the Buddha and then make it, you know, pray for 30 minutes. So she was very smart. Yes, you know, very good idea. I told her. So this is a kind of a, you know, remedy. So we need to know what we do, is it right or wrong? If we do something wrong, then we can replace that due to pure, you know, akusala. And the third precept is Hiri and Pali, more say. So more say in doing unwholesome acts, more say in killing, stealing, and, you know, sexual misconduct, telling lies, and drinking alcohol. So, this is one of the spiritual treasure. It is, you know, the present treasure for us. So long as we possess this, you know, treasure, we, how can I say that, you will abstain from doing wrong things. And once we lost this treasure in our hands, once we drop this treasure in our hands, we'll do whatever we want. Mostly, you know that. Mostly, you know, mostly unwholesome acts. So, and this is one of the treasure that we should possess in our heart. The next one is, you may know already. No. Hiri and Adapa is a moral fear. This is not real fear. that this is a fear of the consequences of the immoral acts, you know. And when we do something wrong is seriously wrong. First, we are going to be blamed by the noble persons, and then we are going to experience the painful consequences. So this immoral act, because we are afraid of these consequences, we are, you know, we have the refrain from abstain from doing wrong. So in the other book, and it is said that these two treasures are the protectors of the world. You know, if we don't have this moral shame and moral fear, the world, you know, will be, so long as we, you know, possess these two treasures, the world will be in good shape. So once we lost these two treasures, the world will be in disorder, you know, maybe like a chaos. We don't care our morality, our precepts. And so it's to know that these two treasures are called Lokapala Dhamma in Pali. Lokapala means the protector of the world. Dhamma means Dhamma. Lokapala Dhamma, the protectors of the world. And these two are also spiritual treasures we should, you know, be cherished. Number fifth is learning Sutta in Pali. Sutta here means not, the learning means not the learning something, not learning something, but learning the Buddha's teaching, Buddha's Dhamma, I mean. So, and the, you know, in the old days, there were no books to learn. So whatever they wanted to learn, something, they have to go to the teacher, and then listen to the teacher, and then, you know, everything, you know, they have to learn everything from this talk. They didn't have a book to write, so they didn't have a book to, you know, learn by heart, something like that. So whatever they learn, they have to learn, you know, the from the talk of the teacher. That's why, you know, Sutta means it. Today is like it, or today we have many facilities to, you know, to learn, you know. Today is a computer age, so we have many things, you know, books and pencils and computers and many things. But in the olden days, there's no books, and that's why, you know, they have to listen everything. That's why Sutta means it. Hearing. So if they hear many things, and they, you know, this hearing can enrich, you know, their knowledge. So here, not ordinary, and learning here, not ordinary learning, means actually knowledgeable. Knowledge. This knowledge is knowing the Buddha's teaching, Buddha's Dhamma. So, so you can acquire this treasure by reading the book, or by asking questions to the teacher, or you know, by having discussions with other people. So there are many ways to get this, you know, this treasure. Now number six is tyaga. Tyaga is giving away. It's like dana, the same. So here, you know, tyaga means we sometimes say like vomit something, you know, vomit out something. So when we give something away, we need to vomit something out before we give this charity. So you may get that. You may guess that. Attachment, or, you know, kind of, you know, greedy. If we are so attached to that things, you know, that was, if I am too attached to that was, do you think I will give it away? No. So what should I do first? I have to kill my attachment, right? I have to, you know, vomit this attachment out. So it's tyaga. Tyaga means give away, because like, you know, when we, you know, spit out our, you know, saliva, you know, do you have any attachment to that saliva? You know, when you have a cough, so just spit out. But without any attachment. In the same way, when you make it down, when you do dharma, so we have to do it the same way, without any attachment. So first we have to give away the attachment, and then later we give something, you know, to someone. And so jaga, here's a jaga. So and this jaga is one of the treasure. And the second one is panya, knowledge. Also, this knowledge is not ordinary knowledge. Here is the knowledge of rise and fall of the mental and physical phenomena. So today, you know, you practice Vipassana meditation. So when you practice Vipassana meditation, let's say, when you breathe in, and then you know that you notice that the breath and the noting mind. The breath and noting all that. When you note the movement of the abdomen and noting mind. So that are two things. So the breath is air is material, matter. And then when you breathe in, and then you know that it's this breath, and then also you note this breath with mind. So mind and matter. They arise and they disappear. They arise and disappear. So always, you know, moving, always changing. This is we cannot say, you know, directly this knowledge, but you are moving to get this knowledge. So when you are practicing Vipassana meditation, you see these two things, mind and matter, the meditation object and the noting mind, meditation object and noting mind, so you have this knowledge. And then next, when you go on, then you will get this knowledge, the knowledge of rise and fall and of the mental physical phenomena. So if you take it, the long retreat, and you can reach that knowledge, not that long, within maybe if you take a 2 week retreat, I think you can take that knowledge. But you are, you know, marching and to that level. So here, knowledge means the knowledge of rise and fall of mental physical phenomena, and we can say that Vipassana knowledge. You know, so today you practice Vipassana, so everything you know is can be called Vipassana knowledge. Let's, you know, look back, examine ourselves, and you know these spiritual treasures are more precious than the material treasures. You know, these are your own treasure. You know, today, you have possessed these seven treasures, and sadhā, confidence, you have that, and sila, morality, you have that. And Hiri, Morashin, Adapa, Morafia, you have that. And Sutta, knowledge and learning. You are learning now by listening. So you have this treasure, and then Jaga or charity, you have that. You're doing, you know, almost every day you're doing the Jaga or Dana. And then Panya, you have this one. Because if you are practicing Vipassana meditation, so you know something, and this knowledge is called Vipassana knowledge. Maybe a little bit, you know, tender, but this tender knowledge, you know, is leading to the mature knowledge. And so these treasures are real treasures. You possess this real treasure. Other material treasures are not real because they are common to the dangers, like material treasures can be burned, can be stolen by someone, can be washed away by water, can be taken by, let's say, you know, notorious sons and daughters, and they can be taken by the government or king. But the seven, spiritual treasure you possess now, can be taken by anyone. That's a weird question. Nobody can take it. Even though, you know, they may take your life, but they cannot take your treasure. That's why, you know, we call that, this is, you know, your real treasure. Nobody can take it. Even though, you know, they may take your life, they cannot take this treasure. This treasure can lead you to get the happiness state or, you know, good state. Also, until you reach the nirvana, the last level. So that's why, you know, we call it the real treasure. So you can check yourself, you can examine yourself. If you have these treasures, you can be pleased with yourself because you possess this, you know, spiritual treasure. If you don't, and then you have to make effort to, you know, to get these real treasures, you know, so that you can have more, you know, benefit in this life as well as in the next life. So may you may you can have you should find to get these, you know, these treasures to be rich spiritual, and then may you take nirvana because of this marriage. Do you have any question yet?
Two books.
One is Dhammapada. 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 Another one is Udana. Udana, yes. So Udana, the one in Udana is more complete. But you should check two books.
What's the number?
Oh, I don't exactly remember. I think the in the Dhammapada is maybe chapter 5. I'm not sure. And the Udana is easy to find because the Udana is a small book. Yes, right. And the story name is Subba Buddha.
Make a lot of noise.
Okay. Any question? Okay, then.
The most precious treasure in the world. That is the Buddha's teaching.
Buddha's teaching.
Yeah. And I'm very lucky. I have Sayago for bringing us the most treacherous thing in the world to us.
This Dana? I'm very happy to make, you know, to the Amali.
Amali?
Yeah.
Oh.
And Sarangu, could you please come and then to please the Emily? Who is going to send this Dana? I wanted to see very long, you know, not only this long years too. To make. Thank you. So now we are going to share our marriage, right? So it's a very good tradition to share our marriage. Whenever we have done some marriage, and then we share. It's a very good. So please repeat after me. May all beings share this marriage.
May all beings share this marriage.
Which we have thus acquired. For the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, deities and others of mighty power, share this marriage of ours. May the Lord protect the teaching.
Sadhu.
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 Sadhu.